Gazaway?
Yes, Cal Gazaway for Appellant Rudy Regancho.
Okay.
Now, Mr. Regancho is appealing from the judge's dismissal of his complaint for a failure to accommodate his disability in the Rehabilitation Act of 1973.
Dismissed it on timeliness grounds.
That's correct.
Administrative timeliness.
The administrative timeliness right. Thing is timely within 45 days.
Right.
Now, we submit on two bases that the district court judge was mistaken. First, under Barnett versus U.S. Air and several other cases, this court has recognized that the accommodation is supposed to be an interactive process. And this is akin to in the National Railroad versus right. Morgan, where they talk about a hostile work environment being a series of involves repeated conduct.
But let me ask you this. At what point along the way, the interactive process, I mean, it contemplates more than an isolated decision, sort of back and forth. That we have case law that says if there isn't a meeting, it doesn't really constitute the interactive process as a matter of law. But at some point along the way, there has to be finality.
That's correct.
So here, where did the process? When did the process end? Assuming that there was some meaningful discussion.
Well, if you look at the correspondence of the Postal Service representative, Ms. Sharon Watson, there's never any time that she said the process was ended.
Well, does the employer have to say this is over?
One of the problems we have with the interactive process in this case is, as far as the Postal Service was concerned, Mr. Regancho, I don't think they ever started the interactive process. They didn't notify him that they were having this draft committee have this meeting.
But he knew about it.
He didn't learn about it until the 19th of March. They'd already been meeting for two mm-hmm. months. On the, if you look at the extra record, on the 22nd of March, the draft
committee. This is what year?
This is, 1999, Your Honor.
All right.
They signed off on the fact that they couldn't accommodate. One of the members of that committee, Mr. Kammermeyer, had stated in February 18th he decided that he couldn't be accommodated. Yet Mr. Regancho was never advised of this, the draft committee meetings, or invited to attend the meetings until he received a certified mail on March 19th. At that point, their decision-making process had been concluded, so he wasn't advised of that, and he wasn't involved in that from the standpoint of being interactive.
But he wrote back, and he said, well, I can do other, he asked for other.
There was a series of correspondence between him and Ms. Watson.
Right.
Yes, sir. And that went until the last letter from Mr. Regancho, I believe, was he represented on the letter on July 22nd. And on July 27th, that was responded to. And that was within that correspondence was within the 45 days.
Let's just assume, if you take all these letters, where do you pin the end of the process? Or do you? Or do you say it never ended?
It would appear to me that the July 22nd letter is the end of it, because at that point it was pretty obvious to Mr. Regancho and his union representative that the Postal Service made the decision they weren't going to consider any offer he provided to them. That was the last of the new alternatives that they had suggested for accommodating was on this letter of July 22nd.
Let me ask you this. Can an employee continually insist? Well, suppose the employer says, I've considered everything you've offered, you've suggested, and we just, you can't do the job. I mean, we can't accommodate you. The employer writes back and says, how about this? I've got a new idea, a new suggestion. Employer writes back and says, nope, that's not going to work either. Can the employee just keep writing letters and
I think then the issue would become on that subsequent letter that was really an alternative for accommodation, and as to whether it was timely as far as that letter. But then you're only looking at that one letter for the not accepting that was to accommodate. At a point, it becomes the issue is ended, and that's when the notice of removal is issued, which occurred in this case in the following November thing.
Well, here the removal was substantially after,
yes.
I think, if I'm not a couple of months later,
after,
right? And nothing really happened during that intervening period.
There was some correspondence with their occupational health nurse as to the basis for his psychologist's recommendation. indication that he'd not work in the same workstation.
Let me ask you this. The letter of July 19th from Ms. Watson ended, not quite ended, but almost, one of the last paragraphs, and ended with a statement, without a clear medical release of his this restriction, that is not being able to go into the main facility where he was going to get training, you will not be allowed into the security areas of the facility. Did that suggest that had he supplied a new medical report that that would have satisfied their concerns?
One of the problems with each of the letters, Ms. Watson, is it always kind of seemed to leave the door open. It didn't shut the door and say, this is the final decision. And that letter, no less than the others, and they responded by coming up with an alternative where he wouldn't have to go into the Public Employee Development Center to receive his training in response to that July 19th letter.
What about the June 28th letter, which says there's no accommodation that was available? You have the following option remaining: apply for disability retirement. Isn't that pretty clear?
That is fairly clear. That's what Judge Singleton found was the last letter where he should have known. I think that's a fact issue that should have been said to the judge at trial.
The fact is what?
Whether that was definitive of the end of his.
Well, tell me why it isn't. If you got a letter like that.
It does advise of his right to appeal. It does advise of his right of the EEO process, and if he's not accommodated, that he can submit a claim. He needs to submit a claim in 45 days on the EEO process. So there are two things that it lacks.
Well, was it the failure to include those things that make it less final?
I think so, yes. The other thing is...
Is there some law on that? Is there some case holding that?
Not as specific applies to the Rehabilitation Act cases that I'm aware of, but on General Administrative Procedures Act, when there's a final agency decision, they have to give the right, the instruction to the person as to what their appeal rights are. And this is omitted from this letter. Also, the termination of the next last sentence where she said we determine accommodation is not possible. But at this point, they still had not included Mr. Bergoglio or his counsel in their deliberations as to what accommodation would be necessary. And that was something Mr. Bergoglio had not his counsel with his ego.
Do you think the interactive means you have to sit around a table face to face and talk?
Well, the handbook, the Postal Service, which is in the materials.
Wait a minute, is that a yes or no?
Yes, yes. I think they need to have discussion with the employee.
Requires them to sit face to face.
Or they could have an interview by a third party that reports back, but there has to be some interaction.
What's wrong with the U.S. mails as an interaction? What law is there that says it has to be some face to face communication?
The handbook 307 that the Postal Service issued so that there would be an interview with the employee.
There's a suggestion in the record here that they offered an interview. They offered to meet with him. And there, I can't quite figure out what happened, but there's some suggestion that he didn't attend the meeting.
The meeting, as I recall, was on March the 5th, and they said that they would invite him to a meeting. A letter was mailed to Mr. Bergoglio dated March the 8th. It was sent March the 9th. It was sent by certified mail. It scheduled a meeting on March the 12th. Mr. Bergoglio got the letter on March the 19th, a week after they had this meeting. And when he got the letter, he immediately called the human resources manager, Ms. Sharon Watson, and told her that he wanted to interact with them. And they went ahead on March 22nd, issued their final decision.
So as Judge, I guess as you argued, you said there is a question of fact. I mean, the question of fact would be, would a reasonable employee under all these circumstances have understood as of June 28th, taking Judge Noonan's date, that the interactive process had ended and therefore he had to go file a complaint with the EEO officer?
Based on the information that the employee had, in this case he did not have the March 22nd minutes with the meeting notice about the meeting, the select mm-hmm. meeting they hold.
Okay, thank you. You start your time. I'll give you a minute to reply.
Good morning. May I please report? Andrew Yang from the Department of Justice on behalf of the Postal Service. I'd like to follow up on Judge Noonan's question regarding the timing. The district court correctly determined that at the latest, that Mr. Rigaccio's June 28th receipt of the June 24th letter would give unequivocal and clear notice that the agency's final decision had been issued. But I'd like to put that in context. That letter followed a slew of letters which each made clear even before the 28th that the agency's process had concluded and had responded to each of Mr. Rigaccio's claims. On the 14th of April, the committee issued a letter that said, as a result of our review, there are no reasonable accommodations that are available to you to allow you to perform your essential functions of your present position. And they suggested two options, that he may request reassignment or request disability retirement. They gave him 30 days to respond. That's at ER 34. He responded. He recognized. He said, I realize that my limitations leave me very few of any options to work in mail processing or customer service, at ER 35. And then he requested generally another reassignment. On the 27th of May, the committee returns with a response that said there's no available clerk positions and that they were granting Mr. Rigaccio his request for an extension and that he had a, quote, final opportunity to request permanent light-duty reassignment to a funded vacant position and that he had 15 days. That would have brought him to June 11th. This is the May 27th letter at ER 38. There was another letter from Mr. Rigaccio, and then in response, on the 3rd of June, the committee issued a letter saying that requested positions are not vacant or funded, and that as to Mr. Rigaccio's request for scheme training, that he was medically restricted from entering the facility, and that they have determined that, quote, we are unable to provide you with the training to qualify for your position, unquote, and then it concludes that the deadline remains June 11th for any kind of further response from Mr. Rigaccio.
Did that invite him to submit a revised medical?
Your Honor, I believe that if the process had, if there had been new medical evidence submitted that was perfect.
No, but did it invite him to?
I don't know that it specifically invited him, but of course, as this back and forth goes forward in the interactive process, that kind of material would be considered.
I didn't mean to interrupt you. You were going. So that was a June 3rd.
That was June 3rd. There was a letter by Mr. Rigaccio on the 11th asking for additional time. And then on the 22nd, he submitted yet another letter explaining that, addressing the question of scheme training. And then on the 24th, this is the final letter which he received on the 28th that is pertinent. Again, explained why he could not receive the training in the facility, and then explains, quote, that the committee met, quote, we met and determined that you have not elected any of the options we offered in our April 14th, May 27th, and June 3rd letters to you, and then went on to say, quote, we have determined that accommodation is not possible, quote, there is no accommodation is available to you, you have the following option. Apply for disability requirement, unquote. This is at page 43 of the excerpt of the record. The district court properly concluded that a reasonable person in this situation would find no later than the 28th have unequivocal notice that the agency's decision had been made. And what's relevant here, as it is in any kind of disability or discrimination context, is that when there's been a final decision by the agency, it's the decision that starts the process of the 45-day time period to consult with the EEO office. And to the extent that there's any dispute, Mr. Rigaccio likes to characterize this as an interactive process and it's kind of open-ended, doesn't have any time frame. The problem is that the interactive process leads to a decision. It is that decision that starts the 45-day period for going to the EEO office. And by the 28th of June, 1999, at the latest, a reasonable employee would have had that notice, and the district court was correct to find.
So if on receiving the June 28 letter,
yes.
He said, gee, we forgot something. I've really got something that I need to bring up. And they write a letter back and say, Why don't we think about that wouldn't stop the process? The interactive process is over.
Well, Your Honor raises two separate potential issues. If he had come back and said, for instance, I need a further extension, a third extension.
No. I said he came back with an idea.
And the agency came back with an idea.
No. He did.
He
says, look, I've thought this up. This is something we forgot. This has never come up before. Try this.
Well, if he had done that at that point, and the agency had decided, what I think could entertain it, but the agency also, in light of this long history, through multiple extensions prior, could have said, this process has ended, we've drug it out far enough, we're standing by our decision. Either one would have been fine. But, of course, that's not what happened here. What happened is on the 24th.
Yeah, I understand.
The agency made very clear, if it wasn't already clear by the 3rd of June,
I understand the argument. What I have a problem with is this Morton case where it states that if it is the employer's responsibility through participation in the interactive process to assist in identifying possible accommodations.
Your Honor, I understand your question, but that question goes to the merits of the decision. If there has been a decision, and the 45-day time period starts to run, to the extent that Mr. Rigaccia would like to challenge the interactive process and would like to say that it's insufficient, he has to do so by timely challenging the decision that's made that results from what the agency believes it was an act.
You mean, you're not saying it becomes void. You're saying there has to be a challenge.
There has to be a challenge, and that challenge has to be in 45.
It doesn't kick up the 45-day again.
No, it does not. And that's important, Your Honor, because in these types of employment disputes, the employer has to be able to rely on decisions that are made that are not challenged. And in fact, the Supreme Court in Evans, which the court cited to and discusses in the Morton case, which the court has applied in lines to this particular context, explained that when an employee fails to challenge an action, and that time runs, the employer at that point is entitled to treat that action as lawful, regardless of whether it is or is not. Once that time runs, the employer is allowed to rely upon it. And here, where the employee had clear notice by at least at the latest, the 28th of June, the employer was allowed to rely on that decision going forward and having not challenged it.
Okay, let me move you to another question.
Sure.
As I understand counsel's argument, is that the interactive process was void, therefore he gets another crack. And the reason the interactive process was void is it's insufficient to have these letters going back. There's got to be a face-to-face meeting. Now, I'd like your response to that, because apparently there weren't face-to-face meetings.
What's at issue is fear, first point, Your Honor, is not whether the interactive process was correct, not correct. What's at issue is whether there was an employment decision that was unlawful under the Age Act. And to be able to challenge that employment decision, that is to challenge the interactive process, Mr. Rigaccia needed to file or at least contact the EEO office within 45 days of June 28th latest, which he did not. Now, your question really goes to the merits. Like, what is an interactive process? Do we have to have a face-to-face meeting? Is it sufficient to have letters? Your Honor, letters can be more than sufficient, just as in many administrative contexts, they can be sufficient. But we're not there here at this point, because again, the question is, once the employee has notice of the decision, that is, the administration, the agency's back and forth, and the agency's view is done, and they've said there's no option now except disability retirement. Mm-hmm. On the 28th of June, if he doesn't file was contact the EEO office by 45 days from that date, then whether or not the interactive process is efficient is irrelevant.
Okay, so what you're saying, it doesn't make it void. If he's right, it may make it voidable, but that issue has to come up to the contact of the EEOC office.
That's right, Your Honor. It goes to the merits of whether there was a reasonable accommodation that was provided to Mr. Rigaccia, and that question would arise only if Mr. Rigaccia had timely contacted the EEO office to start the EEO process. He did not. And the district court was correct in determining that June 28th at the latest was the date that a reasonable employee would have known to start that.
So what you're saying is he shouldn't have bothered with the July 12th letter?
Your Honor, if he wishes to send a further letter, of course.
And then she responds on July 19th. All she basically she says reiterate. You know, she has a lot and lengthy explanation. She says without a clear medical release, and then she goes on to say, this letter is being provided to you to answer your questions and reiterate that you have the option of applying for disability
retirement.
That's
right. What I think what you're seeing there is a employer's attempt to keep this amicable here. The decision had been clearly made. Mr. Rigaccio sent another letter, and if that letter that you're talking about, the 19th, which is an excerpt of Record 47, simply reiterates what's already gone on. It says, on May 27th, we said this. On June 3rd, we said this. On June 24th, we said this. And then she concludes, we're reiterating that you have the option of applying for disability. I mean, it's simply a regurgitation of what's already gone before. There's nothing new. The agency's decision had been made and been communicated to Mr. Rigaccio at the latest by the 28th. Any other rule?
What do you say to counsel's contention that the letter wasn't final unless he was advised of its appeal rights?
Your Honor, there's no requirement of that anywhere. But remember, what we're talking about is not final agency action or any kind of formal requirement in the sense of APA rulemaking. This is a claim of discrimination. It can arise in many, many different contexts.
That's a good answer.
You know, it can arise in many contexts and not just a letter. And the letter here was unambiguous. The 24th letter is unambiguous. It's just a court conclusion.
I have one last question. What role does the union play in all of this? Because there was after that July letter, the representative from the union chimes in.
Well, the union's role is not pertinent with respect to the EEO process. There are union collective bargaining agreements that come into play, and it's certainly possible that there might have been, in fact, there was a grievance proceeding that went on.
Right. So it's just an independent.
It's independent. The union may assist sometimes in the EEO process, but it's certainly not a required thing.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor, the letter of June 24th, if you look at the correspondence, that is the first time the Postal Service tells Mr. Rigaccio the reason he's not getting the scheme training for his fifth position on the field scheme they're on was because his doctor's medical restrictions said he could not could not go back to the station, and they were applying station to mean he could not go into the entire postal, general mail facility out at the airport. Up until then, they hadn't told him this. So his response was he'd take part-time work, or he could be trained someplace else, or he could enter a union. But this is the first time that they actually said that they were interpreting Dr. Albert's restrictions, saying he couldn't go to the place where they provided the training. He said on his letter July 12th, he'd like to be considered for part-time hours. He also states that the Public Employee Development Center is located well aware from the workman floor where he was supposed to go. So he specifically responded to something he was told about the first time in the 24th letter. One of the problems with their involvement with him as far as an interactive process is a lot of the decisions the Postal Service made regarding his accommodation, whether they could accommodate him, they simply were not advising him.
I thought it was the June 3rd letter where they first mentioned it. You are pending qualification on a position at a station that requires scheme training. You are medically restricted from entering the processing and distribution center where the required scheme training is conducted. Therefore, we have been unable to provide you with the training to qualify for the position.
Yes, I'm referring to the fact that they referred to Dr. Albert's letter, November 1998 letter,
okay,
as being the basis for saying that he was medically restricted from going back. Yes.
Okay, thank you. Matter will be submitted. Appreciate your arguments.